Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. Glad you could join us. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And we have some real unenslaving to do today with our guest, Timothy Alberino. He's written some really interesting stuff, provocative stuff. And you're talking to an ex-university professor here. I got to tell you, the book Birthright, I've been going through it here for about the past week. And it's like going through an amazing maze of research. Material. It's fantastically well documented, and we'll be touching on that, I'm sure, as we get into the topic of disclosure. But before we go to Tim, just wanted to let everybody know this first section is brought to you by Noble Gold, and we're really glad to have them on board. For a long time, I was just an advertiser, and then I saw the great things they did, and I said, I need part of that. And with the M3 money supply doing what it's doing, and watch out, because we've got a dynamite show coming up on that with Bob Griswold. The M3 is showing us that we can't go backwards and print less money, but as we continue to do the opposite, we're headed for hyperinflation. So you really need to get your assets protected, and Noble Gold are experts at that. They can do for you what they've done for me. No one's going to come through this unscathed, but you can minimize the damage to some degree, and Noble Gold are experts at that. For a no-obligation interview, and they'll send you free material, give them a call, 877-646-5347. That's 877-646-5347. Tell them Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show sent you. Well, Timothy Alberino is really well-known in my circles. We've shared a conference together, the Branson Conference Steve Quayle put on. Fantastic stuff. He's an author, a filmmaker. He travels all over the place putting together these great documentaries, and I've caught some of them, and they're just, they're mesmerizing. They really are, and they're high quality. It's Hollywood-type quality stuff, and I've been going through his book, like I said, Birthright, which is absolutely fantastic, and a lot of it gets into the who are the aliens really, what are they about, what's the true history behind this, and how does human history, and more importantly, biblical history, how does that fit into this entire paradigm where he expands the life of the universe way beyond what the Bible gives us? The Bible gives us a snapshot of our immediate history, and it's just incredibly conceptualized. And we're going to talk about disclosure. It's going to be our starting point today because, as we know, President Biden is withdrawing, or withholding, I should say, key elements of both the Kennedy assassination and also, too, UFOs, what we know about them. They're redacting information like crazy, and that's what they do release. A lot of it they're not releasing, so you have to wonder what they're hiding. So, Tim, welcome to the show. First-time guest. Really glad to have you on, Tim. What do you think Biden is up to with hiding everything? Does it relate to the fact that they don't want us to know our true history, like what you're writing about in this book?
Well, I think we're all familiar with the concept of the deep state. I call it the deep state, because when you talk about the deep state, the true deep state, you are literally talking about an institution, secret agencies, some governmental, some non-governmental, that are literally operating miles beneath the surface of the earth. So they're literally the deep state. And, of course, I'm referencing the deep underground military bases.
Mm-hmm.
And the redacting of information regarding UFOs it has to do with what ufologist Richard Dolan has coined the breakaway civilization, in my estimation. And and Richard also agrees with this assessment that we believe that there is a group of individuals, a group of people, again, some governmental, some non-governmental, that are in possession of highly advanced technology. And when I say advanced technology, I'm talking about technology that is perhaps dozens, if not hundreds of years in advance of what we have today, and that technology was derived from back engineering crash retrievals. And when I say crash retrievals, I'm talking about alien crash retrievals. Vehicles not made on this earth, as it was put recently in a Pentagon paper. So these individuals, it's not in their interest that the public begins to learn about the alien presence. However, because of the heightened activity as it pertains to UFOs, the disclosure, some level of disclosure, is inevitable. And that's why we see the Pentagon trying to get ahead of the disclosure and control the narrative as much as they can, because there's too many interactions now. Our military forces are having interactions with UFOs. They've always had interactions with UFOs, especially the Air Force and the Navy, but the pace is quickening. And so the Pentagon has to get in front of the story, but they're not going to reveal. The alien presence is one thing. I think they're okay with revealing aspects of the alien presence, but what they don't want the public to know is how long they've known, A, how long they've known, and B, how much technology they've been able to derive from crash retrievals, because that is, in some sense, it's a betrayal of mankind, withholding important technologies from the human race, and other things involved that cover up the extent of the cover up, the obfuscation that's gone on over the years, an aggressive policy of non-disclosure, a bloody policy of non-disclosure that's been enacted in the past, that's been in place up until recently. So all of these things combined, that's the reason why we're not getting the straight story on disclosure. We're getting a drip. We're getting just enough information so that they can look like they're being somewhat honest, but not enough information to figure out what the truth is.
When you said how long they've been obfuscating the facts, would that go back to the Eisenhower years and those alleged interactions?
Yes, that, definitely. And before, it goes all the way back to Truman. And it's really during the administration of Truman, that's when the Majestic 12 organization, or Majesty 12, was initiated. And Majesty 12, it was a secretive organization that Truman inaugurated. And these individuals were pulled from, it was 12 individuals that were pulled from both governmental and the private sectors. And these were important people, smart, really smart people, the best of the best. And it was their job to manage the alien presence as best they could, and to govern the engineering, the reverse engineering of alien technology, and the development of technology derived from what we were able to reverse engineer. And so that's really when the cover-up began. There was, you know, most people are familiar with the Foo Fighter phenomenon from World War II, mm-hmm. and that involved the orbs. And the orbs, in my estimation, are probes. They're deployed from the saucers. And it represents technology. This is not a supernatural phenomenon. This is a very physical phenomenon. It's a highly technological phenomenon.
Interesting you'd mention the orbs. We got a little family experience with this. My dad and his commander, an admiral, they were in charge of rewiring the Combat Information Center on the carrier Roosevelt back in the later 50s. And this is before the advent of satellites. And so to keep the Soviets from knowing what they were doing, they traveled around the Cape Horn, and they went far, far south so the Russians wouldn't suspect or see anything as they installed nuclear weapons. And they were followed for four straight nights by glowing orbs. And they mm-hmm. never knew what to make of it.
Yeah, I have reason to believe that the orbs are deployed from the saucers. And the saucers, by the way, can come together. They can amalgamate into the cigar-shaped craft. And when they come together, it's a combined power source. But the orbs deploy from the saucers. And it's not just saucers. There's different, you know, generally speaking, the saucers, because there's what's called almond-shaped craft. There's the flat disks. There's the teardrop-shaped craft, and an assortment of aerospace vehicles. But the orbs are reconnaissance probes, and they come in all sizes, by the way. Sometimes they're the size of a basketball. Sometimes they're quite large. Sometimes they're very small, and people have them moving through their homes. moving through their houses and moving up against the walls and sort of floating around. And it's just a very high, it's a highly technological apparatus that's being deployed that of course we can't understand because it's practically magic to us, right? Any Arthur C. Clarke said that any technology that's sufficiently advanced was basically indistinguishable from magic to us. And that is indeed true. So that's my, and I'm not the only one who thinks that the orbs are reconnaissance probes. A lot of people think that, but that's why they would deploy the orbs to follow fighters or to hover around military bases or whatever. They can listen and they can watch, and that's what they do.
Well, it makes sense that they do that with the installation of nuclear weapons, which is a quantum leap above what the Navy had been using. The other thing I wanted to ask you here is I read from your book the nature of these aliens. A lot of people will go back to Genesis 6 and they'll say all aliens technically are fallen angels, or they come from heaven themselves. What's your view on this?
I have a different view, to say the least. You have to go back and define your terms, and that's the problem. Is there's a lot of terminology that's sort of whimsically wielded around in our circles, and fallen angel is one of those terms, and demon is another. And so either there's what's called the demon theory of UFOs, and that's the most common theory in evangelical circles. And the demon theory of UFOs is closely related to the interdimensional theory of UFOs. And basically what the demon theory says is that UFOs are governed by demonic beings, and that the whole phenomenon is demonic, in not just demonic in the sense that it's nefarious, but demonic in the sense that it's directly related to demonology in the biblical narrative. And that the beings inside of the craft are either demons themselves, the little gray aliens are demons in the biblical sense, or fallen angels. And I don't believe that theory is adequate to describe the phenomenon. In fact, proponents of the demon theory of UFOs will actually claim that the saucers themselves are fallen angels. In other words, there's that the hardware is not actually hardware. It's a supernatural ruse. It's and some people will go so far as to say that fallen angels metamorphosize into inanimate objects like a saucer, which is of course completely nonsensical. So if you reverse engineer this thought, you go back to the origin of the terms, and you understand these terms from an ancient Hebrew perspective, because if you're going to deploy these terms in your attempt to explain the phenomenon, then you have to have the terms anchored in some kind of a definition that is understandable, that is generally agreed upon. And the problem with the term fallen angel is it's not actually a biblical term. There is no term fallen angel in the Bible. Of course, demon is in the Bible, in the Greek and the Hebrew. But the term fallen angel, that term that we use, fallen angel, is referencing something. And this something that it's referencing are probably better described as insurrectionary apostate sons of God. Or just apostate sons of God is probably the most accurate definition, because these beings, these sons of God that are apostate, that have rebelled against God, are here. They're on the earth. I believe they were here before we were, by the way. And they are very ancient, and they are directly related. They are kin to the good guys, to the good angels, the sons of God that did not rebel, the loyal sons of God. So you have the loyal sons of God who are with God still. And then you have a smaller faction of disloyal sons of God, apostate sons of God. And those beings are here on the earth, and they don't have wings. And there's no reason to believe that they have magical powers, that they can, what's the terminology? Is it translocate? And there's no reason to believe any of that. And the reason why there's no reason to believe any of that is because in the scriptures, if we're going to use the Hebrew scriptures as our framework for our understanding here, when we see angelic beings moving around, they're always using some kind of vehicle of conveyance. For example, when the angelic being comes to pick up Elijah, when Elijah and Elisha are waiting for Elijah to be taken, they arrive in what's called a chariot of fire. And of course, we know that it's not a chariot, and it's not horses pulling it. It's something else. It's some kind of an aerospace vehicle that Elijah physically gets into, and then it lands. He gets into it and then takes off. So, and that was an angelic being piloting that vehicle. And so these beings use vehicles of conveyance, and there's numerous references to this in the biblical narrative. They're always using vehicles of conveyance to move. And so, without getting too far afield here, this group of entities constitutes a race. Indeed, it constitutes a civilization, a very, very ancient civilization that comes from a pre-Adamic context, and that is certified in the biblical narrative. The sons of God were shouting for joy when the earth was being created, according to the book of Job. So these are very, very, very ancient beings, possibly millions of years old, possibly. And so that's who we're dealing with when we talk about quote-unquote fallen angels. We're dealing with a faction of that race, of that civilization, that is in a state of insurrection. It's in an insurrectionary state against the King of Heaven. They are apostate. They are rebel sons of God whose habitation is now planet Earth. They were kicked out of heaven, quote-unquote heaven, which I think is somewhere else in the cosmos, and they are now, their locality is now the Earth. So, having said all of that, are those beings, are those apostate sons of God piloting some of these UFOs? My answer is yes, I believe they are, because that technology the technology itself belongs to this ancient civilization who I denominate the Elder Race in my book. And the reason why I call them the Elder Race is because those are two very important attributes. First of all, elder obviously means older, and that's in reference to the human race. They're older than us, and race because how else should we describe them if not a race? They are a race. They constitute a race. So they're an older race than the human in relationship to the human race. Indeed, I go so far as to say that there are older siblings, and we look like them. And in the book, I go through I provide the scriptural context of why I believe these things. And so the good guys, the elder race, their civilization is the originator of this advanced technology. And so both the good guys and the bad guys are using the same technology. And in the same way that on Earth, human beings, you know, you can have Americans, if we were to go to war with China, we're basically using the same technology. You know, little bit of a variance between our technology and the Chinese, but we're basically using the same technology. We're not using different technology in the same way that the angels and the quote unquote fallen angels are not using different technology. They're in possession of the same knowledge. They speak the same language. They look the same, and they're using the same technology. And so, yes, that's a long winded answer to say yes, the quote unquote fallen angels are some of the beings utilizing that technology. Now the demon aspect, and I'll try to make this, you know, 1 minute explanation. The demon aspect is a little bit more difficult, because if we were to say that the gray aliens, for example, are demonic in the sense that they are nefarious, that is an accurate statement. They are demonic because what they do is wicked. But are they demons in the ancient Hebrew sense? And I think the answer to that is clearly no, because demons, according to the ancient Hebrew account, demons are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim from the pre-flood world, and that's all they are. So they're bodiless vagabonds that are wandering the earth. They're wraiths. And they're seeking bodies, and these are the possessing spirits that Jesus encounters in the New Testament. He calls them unclean spirits, which is exactly the phraseology that's used in the Book of Enoch regarding these entities. They were banished from when the giants died in the pre-flood world. The giants were neither fully human nor fully angelic, and so they were cursed. Their spirits were cursed to wander as vagabonds, bodiless vagabonds, disembodied wraiths on the earth. And they possess human bodies, and they can possess animals and so forth as well. However, they have, in my estimation, they have nothing to do whatsoever with gray aliens, and they are not flying UFOs. They don't do that. That's not what demons do. And then I give some further explanations of why the idea that demons are gray aliens is incongruent when you take a look at the actual data regarding gray aliens.
Okay, I mean, that's a lot to digest there. Good job in the 1 minute, because that's a ton of explanation. So demonic possession is real, but it's separate and apart from the gray aliens that we often refer to from UFO reports. Am I hearing that correctly?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, and then so what we look at next is who's the greater threat?
In regards to whom?
In regards to us.
Fallen angels or demons?
Yes.
Between those two factions? Well, the fallen, the let's call them the apostate sons of God, have always been a great threat to humanity. And the reason why they're a threat to humanity isn't because they have the authority to assail us with technology and take over our governments and so forth. They clearly don't. Indeed, Adam was given authority over everything on the earth, all living things, including the apostate sons of God who were here when Adam was created. And so the devil's authority on the earth does not supersede our authority. Indeed, our authority supersedes his. What he is permitted to do is to tempt us. He can tempt us. He can twist us and manipulate us, but he needs... he needs humanity to abdicate authority to him. And so the devil, I use the designation the dragon, because mm-hmm. this is something that most people don't realize when they read the scriptures, is that this character, the dragon, the devil, that serpent of old, as John says, who was in Eve with Eden, this character is never actually named. We think he was named because we have a misnomer, Lucifer, that is actually comes from the Latin Vulgate, that was translated by Jerome, which it's a misnomer. His name is not Lucifer. It's a description. It's a designation that he's a morning star is what that is designating. In other words, he's a member of the elder race. So he's never actually named, and I always like to say that it's for those familiar with the Harry Potter series. He's much like the character Voldemort in Harry Potter, he who should not be named, because he's such a revolting character. He's so reviled that he's not even given the dignity of a name. Indeed, he's, you know, we have the term Satan Hasatan, which we've taken that term and we've made it into a proper name, Satan. When in reality, HaSatan, the Satan, refers to multiple entities, not just one. Or the New Testament calls him the adversary. So there is one chief adversary, for sure. And in fact, in the book, I believe that there are seven princes. There are seven primary princes. And the chief of this, and this is represented in the red dragon of Revelation, and the chief of these is the dragon, this prince who was the chief among the princes, not the prince of princes. That was always the Son of God. But basically you can think of him as second in command under the Son of God. And it was that individual who has caused the most havoc, especially in a pre-Adamic context. I believe, and this is just my opinion, and I do lay some foundation, some scriptural foundation. Now the reader can judge whether it's strong or weak, that the rebellion of this character, who we like to call the Prince of Darkness, the adversary, led to the complete ruination of our solar system. And the obliteration of the planet Rahab, which is now the debris field between Mars and Jupiter.
So you subscribe to that asteroid belt is a destroyed planet inhabited by the evil one, right? Yeah, I've heard that a lot. a real popular concept. That's really, wow. So we're really dealing with those two different entities, and that's what I want to distinguish here. We have those that can possess the demons, and we have those that are visiting, what you might call the grays.
Yes. Now, let's be clear, and the word, and we're going to have to use the word extraterrestrial and the term extraterrestrial and the term alien to correctly describe these beings. And these words have been, for some reason, anathema in seminary classrooms and among evangelicals in general. We don't want to use the term extraterrestrial, or especially not alien, when thinking about angels or when thinking about these other entities. And I don't understand why. It doesn't make any sense to me. And when I was writing the book, I felt like I needed to help people work through this strange mental block that we have. An extraterrestrial, by definition, is any being, let's limit it to a sentient being, any sentient being whose origin, whose provenance is not planet Earth. That's it. That's what an extraterrestrial means. That's what extraterrestrial means. So by definition, angels are definitely extraterrestrial. They were in the cosmos before the Earth was created. Their origin is not planet Earth. Angels are, both the good guys and the bad guys, 100% extraterrestrial, 100%. And these entities that let's talk about the grays. The grays, I believe, also are extraterrestrial. And before we talk more about the grays, let's talk about demons for a moment, because demons are interesting. Demons are not extraterrestrial. Demons are earthborn. In fact, that's one of the definitions of the term in the Greek, the gigantes, the term in the Greek used to describe the giants. It means earthborn. That's part of the definition, earthborn. And indeed, they are earthborn. They were born here. So they are terrestrial. Like us, demons are terrestrial. But the elder race, the angelic race, is extraterrestrial. And the word alien is a little bit more nebulous. The definition of the word alien is a little bit more nebulous. It just means something that's not us, something that's not human in that term, because it can mean foreigners and all kinds of things. But in a cosmic sense, alien means something that is not human. And so both demons and angels are alien to the human species because they're not us. They're not human. We're closely related to demons because they're part us. But the elder race, the angelic race, constitutes a completely different race from the human race. And so the term extraterrestrial and alien we should adopt these terms into our vernacular and be comfortable using them because they're accurate. They're completely accurate in the biblical context. So the gray aliens, what are those? Well, there's different. First of all, let's right off the bat, let's say that they are absolutely physical beings. These are not spiritual, supernatural beings. These are physical entities, and they do constitute in themselves a race as well, separate from us and separate from the elder race. And they may be hybrids of some kind, or they may be composite beings, or they may be biological drones of some kind. But what's important to understand about the grays is that it's very likely that they come from somewhere else in the cosmos. Why do I say that? Because we now know, in fact, the Pentagon has let slip a little bit of this information, and certainly has not negated it, that the materials found in their craft are what's called exotic matter. And these exotic materials are that we know are some are comprised some of the components in the UFOs. We know that these exotic materials, some of them are not derived on Earth. They're not. They're exotic. That means that they're found somewhere else in the universe, or they're found on Earth in very, very, very small quantities. So just the fact that we know that the craft are composed of exotic material is a big signal that these craft were not built on Earth. They were built somewhere else in the cosmos. They were fabricated somewhere else in the cosmos, Mars or who knows, our solar system or elsewhere. That's a big signal that these guys are not from around our neighborhood, cosmically speaking. They're from a different planet. They come from somewhere else.
Well, let me ask you this. How do the goals differ for the demons versus the extraterrestrials? What's their intent?
Well, demons, again, within the ancient Hebrew context, and the reason why I say that is because we've sort of created, Western Christians have created a whole nother cosmology for demons and fallen angels than the ancient Hebrew cosmology. And that is largely due to the what I call a medieval perspective, a medieval Christian cosmology. So we've taken these demonic beings from the Old Testament, which were only disembodied spirits, and we've given them flesh and blood, and we've sort of taken this nomenclature demon, and we've stuck it on anything that's bizarre and alien and nefarious. And so it's really confused the whole situation. Within the Hebrew context, demons, their desire is their part of their curse. And this comes from the Book of Enoch. Part of their curse was that they would be disembodied and they would wander the earth as vagabonds, and they would have a ceaseless hunger. They would be ceaselessly thirsty. They would have all we can infer based on the text that they would have all the desires of the flesh, but without flesh to fulfill those desires. So it's very much a curse. And this should sound familiar to everyone, because there's several movies that have featured this kind of a curse. The one that always comes to mind is the first Pirates of the Caribbean, where the pirates that were cursed, the Black Pearl, I think, was the name of the ship that were cursed on the Black Pearl. This was their curse. They basically had all the desires of the flesh, lust and hunger and thirst, but they couldn't fulfill those desires. And all they wanted in that movie, all they wanted, the only thing they wanted, they didn't want gold anymore, they didn't want treasure, they got that, and that's what cursed them. All they wanted was to break the curse and to be able to eat and drink and, you know, and satiate all of the desires of the flesh. And that is a very accurate portrayal of the Nephilim, the spirits of the giants, the vagabond demonic spirits. What they desire, it's an all-consuming desire, is to satiate the desires of the flesh. They have no flesh. That's why they inhabit the flesh of human beings, and they probably somehow connect into our sensory faculties, and they can interact with the material world again, and they can eat and drink and satiate, at least to some degree, the lust of the flesh through our flesh. And that's what they want. I don't believe that demons have a strategy or have a conspiraty beyond beyond satiating their carnal desire.
That makes a lot of sense. How about the extraterrestrials, their strategy?
The Greys, if we talk – now, there may be other factions out there. And I don't know about – I'm completely open to the idea of other factions, but I don't know if there are other factions. But I do know that the Greys exist. And the Greys are engaged in what's sometimes referred to as a breeding program. They're creating alien-human hybrids. And I believe that their desire, their goal, is to integrate into human society and to some degree to supplant us. And this is achieved through the creation of what Dr. Jacobs calls hubrids. And hubrids are advanced human hybrids. And when I say advanced, I mean human hybrids, alien human hybrids, that look so similar to human beings that we could not tell the difference between a hybrid and a regular human being. So they're advanced hybrids, and they're moving into society right now. I believe they're coming into their final phases of their project. They're moving into the final phases of their project, which involves these hybrids, these advanced alien human hybrids. Beginning to integrate into human society. They're learning the most basic, the most fundamental aspects of being a human being in society. They're learning how to grocery shop. They're learning how to drive a car. They're learning how to use a refrigerator, how to use a television. They're learning about the internet. They're like children. They have to learn everything. And there's a whole lot for them to learn. And they're in this integration phase right now. So what's the end game for the Grays? I subscribe to David Jacobs, who's the premier. David Jacobs was the premier. He's still alive. The premier abduction researcher, alien abduction researcher. And according to his thesis, he believes that the objective of the Grays is planetary acquisition. And I agree. I think that the Grays are executing a project of planetary acquisition. Now, the really interesting question, the question that I cannot answer definitively, in fact, I give three alternatives in my book. The question that I cannot answer definitively is how the apostate sons of God play into this scenario. And I have a favorite view of that, but I give three alternatives, and there's certainly a connection there. There's no way that the apostate sons of God, these very intelligent beings who have been here since the beginning, before mankind, there's no way that they're not some way associated with the program of the Grays. They at least are aware of it and have something to do with it. Whether they're directly controlling the actions of the Grays. And by the way, when we talk about the little gray aliens, you know, these guys are about 3 to 4 foot tall. They got the big bulbous heads with the black almond-shaped eyes. They're the typical beings that you see, the alien being. They're not, when we say Grays, those are the worker bees. Those are the worker bees in the program. There's a hierarchy of entities apparent on the craft. There's these taller, more spindly, mantis-like beings who Dr. Jacobs calls insectolins. And they are definitely in charge of the little worker bees, the bulbous-head, almond-shaped eye grays. The mantis creatures are definitely in charge of the captains of the craft, let's say. And there's also been a lot of reports of reptilian type beings that are also associated with the Grays somehow. So those reptilian beings may be indigenous to the Earth, or they may come from somewhere else. But they're either subjugated by the Grays, or at least some of them, or they have some sort of an association with the Grays. But the gray aliens are the ones, including the mantis. When I say gray, I'm talking about the little guys and the mantis-like insectolin beings. Those are the guys that are executing the abduction program. They're the ones responsible for the alien abduction phenomena.
And that's strictly a hybrid program, right, to create the race that you just referenced.
Yes, that program is completely dedicated to the creation of advanced alien-human hybrids, for the express purpose of integrating into human society incognito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard this before, and I've had a couple of interesting encounters along those lines. But the goal, though, are they? How far has it gone? Are they the deep state? Do they control the deep state? Do they control world leaders? I would imagine they would gravitate towards positions of power.
That's a great question. Let's talk about how old they are. The premise of ancient astronaut theory, which everybody is most familiar with through the TV show Ancient Astronauts, or Ancient Aliens. The premise of ancient astronaut theory is actually a biblical premise. The rest of it's bunk. The premise says that mankind has been interacting with extraterrestrials since the beginning. Yes, that is a biblical principle. It's part and parcel of the biblical narrative. We have been interacting with extraterrestrials since the beginning, as I explained earlier on, that this angelic race is extraterrestrial, for sure. So that is, the premise of ancient astronaut theory is correct, biblically speaking. Now, where they go immediately astray is they believe that these entities had a hand in creating us. You know, and that's the whole ancient astronaut theory, that they splice their DNA with perhaps a Bigfoot-type creature or some early hominid, and that from that splicing they were able to derive the human species. So that's obviously where we part ways from ancient astronaut theory. we're Christians, we're biblical Christians part ways. But the premise, nevertheless, is accurate. So have extraterrestrials been interacting with human beings since the beginning of human history? Yes. Which extraterrestrials? The sons of God, for sure. Now, what about the Greys? I do not believe that the Greys have been interacting with mankind since the beginning, which ancient astronaut theorists do believe, that most of them do believe that the Greys have been around for a long time. I do not. And indeed, most of the leading ufologists, Richard Dolan and David Jacobs, to name two, agree, as do I, that the Greys likely showed up in the late 1800s, mid to late 1800s. They showed up, and they began to initiate their program of hybridization. So they've been around, and I think there's very strong evidence for this, so they've been around since the late 1800s. And their program then has been going on for, you know, a century and some change, so century and a half. So they're advanced in their program at this point. They've been at this for a while. And it's been a learning process for them. It wasn't like they just appeared on the scene and then created a perfect alien human hybrid. We know if you study the abduction material, you can see that they've been progressing, they've been advancing, and slowly creating a more perfect alien human hybrid.
Interesting.
And so
we've got to hold it here for a second because I got to get in this break or we're going to be in big trouble. But ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Tim Alvarino, and this is fascinating, and I got some questions for him when we come back. But I just wanted to make sure that you understand that I've made a list. There are 19 impediments to our food supply, and there are deliberate things in many cases that this administration that's in charge now with one-party rule is doing to us. And is there a foolproof answer? No, I'm not going to lie to you and say there is. But you can keep the wolf from the door for a significant amount of time. My good friend Bob Griswold, who I call King Prepper, says you really need 2 years in seeds. And he goes, that may not even be enough, but you really can't plan much beyond that. But, you know, you say, well, I can't do 2 years. Okay, well, you can do maybe 6 months. But I'm just saying, folks, if you don't, you're going to be dependent upon a government that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan. That's how much they hold you in contempt. So to find out more about the great deals and great opportunities from My Patriot Supply, including the sales, the quality, go to preparewithdave.com, and it's all explained right there, and I'll lay it out for you. They'll say, here's how it is, and you'll see, hey, it's a pretty good deal. In fact, actually, I think it's the best deal out there, and that's why we represent them. Go to preparewithdave.com. One other thing I want to mention here, close out our ad segment for the hour, but it's the importance of sat phones. And I've come to this party late. I really have. And I have my sat phone, and we have our message system on it in case we're ever taken down. We can still communicate with each other. I believe sat phones will be the last thing they take down. It's a hard thing to take down for a lot of different reasons. And if we look at grid down scenarios, if you look at scenarios of purpose grid down to control a population and encircle them, like continuity of government emergency plans, your sat phones will probably still work. You'll be able to communicate with family members, friends, and get news. And I think that's really, really important. Plus, when you're driving remote areas where the cell phone's not working, a sat phone only needs the sky. And you say, is it expensive? No, I pay about a quarter of the cost for my sat phone than I do for my cell phone, but I don't chit-chat. So I do save a lot of money that way. To find out more and to get more details on what I'm giving you here, I want you to make a phone call. 855-980-5830. That's 855-980-5830. Well, we're talking with Tim Alvarino, and we're discussing two different planes of integration. And I look at it as invasion of humanity. One is possible of demonic possession, and the other, as Tim called it, planetary acquisition strategy through hybridization. And I hope I'm interpreting this correctly. But Tim, I want to tell you about a couple of experiences and have you interpret them, because I think we're at that point where my background may start to coincide with what you're saying here. When I was teaching an intro psych class, I had a student who approached me one time, and he claimed to be the grandson of a Hopi elder, and I had actually to enlist help in this because I didn't know enough about the topic to even really communicate with him. And he claimed that we had been visited by beings for a long time, and that even their ancient technology that we haven't learned how to access was underground deep beneath the city of Phoenix and other locations around the planet, but they had to be biometrically accessed, and we hadn't cracked the code. And his grandfather knew all about this as a Hopi elder. And the other thing, I had a friend named Vance Davis, who was former NSA, and he said in part of his integrated training, and he had interactions with parts of NATO that dealt with extraterrestrials, he said they were told that they lost a major war in the cosmos and they were cast down to Earth, and that they wanted to take over the human soul, but they couldn't crack the code, and so they were going to morph the human being. This is before transhumanism as a term came into vogue. I mean, this is about 10 years before transhumanism when he told me this. Can you react to those two stories?
Fascinating. They resonate with me, with what I know and my research. There is a very, very ancient legend in the Andes that references a primordial race of advanced beings that look very much like us, that, according to the legend, live underground beneath the Andes, and that this race is in possession of advanced technology, and that they've been there before the natives arrived, and that they cannot be directly contacted. You have to go through certain channels to contact them. And these beings are referred to as the Viracocha, or the Huitacocha, in Quechua. And I have reason to believe that that story is accurate, that it's real. It's not just a legend. It's a true legend. And it's... I've heard of installations, let's call them, of these quote-unquote Viracocha, who I would call the apostate sons of God, being installed in different parts of the earth under the ground. Now, these are separate from our deep underground military bases, our DUMs. Our DUMs are derived from Nazi technology, and those were developed by our military. I'm talking about bases that were built by this extraterrestrial angelic faction, the bad guys. And it's the bad guys because those are the guys who were banished here. And the idea that they lost a cosmic war, that, for anybody who's read my book, that certainly resonates with what I write in the book and with what David Flynn wrote in his book, Cydonia. And so I absolutely subscribe to this notion. Where are the sons of God, the apostate sons of God? Where do they reside? Because a lot of Christians, evangelicals, don't think about these angelic beings having a residence or operating technology or eating and drinking, for that matter, or having biological functions. But in fact, they do. And we don't have to go into that here, but I show why that is the case according to the scriptures. And so they have a locality, they have a place of residence on the planet, and rather within the planet, within the depths of the planet. Remember, according, and again, this is laid out in the book, the scriptural reference for this, references, Adam was given dominion over everything on earth. He was made the vice regent of planet Earth, and that included over this faction, this fallen angelic faction. And so they have a residence, and their residence is not in the sky rises in New York City or London or something like that. Their residence is somewhere else within the bowels of the earth. And it's probably very highly technological. And they have, you know, what we might think of as advanced bases, military bases, that are of their own design, of their creation, and from which they scramble their advanced craft, their advanced aerospace vehicles. And again, I've seen some evidence in the Andes that they have a base there, that they're located. That's one of the areas that they're located. The other area that I've heard that it's anecdotal, but I think there's some evidence to point to a base that they have. Is in the Himalayas, It would make sense that if you had the technology to put a base anywhere that was impenetrable and that would withstand earthquakes and so forth, you would put them beneath mountains, because the mountains are comprised of very, very hard rock, and they're very sturdy structures, the sturdiest structures we have on Earth. I mean, you put a base into the bedrock of a mountain, and that's about as best as you can do on planet Earth. And so I think that they've got, they're dwelling beneath the Andes. I think they're dwelling beneath the Himalayas. And there's a certain ways to make contact with these beings very quickly. There's a very interesting legend in Peru that if you want to make contact with the Viracocha, then you have to access this secret society that's known as the Capacuna. And the Capacuna are like the advanced medicine men, the highest echelon of let's say shamans, and the Capacuna, they're very much a secret society in Peru and in the Andes in general, and they're not the shamans that the tourists see, you know, on the side of the on the road, who are, you know, selling their wares and so forth. Those aren't the Capacuna. You'd never know who the Capacuna were. It's a secret society. And the Capacuna are in contact with an intermediary race who are called I'm trying to remember the word. It's a Quechuan word, and it means the red eyes. And I'm trying to remember the word in Quechua, but I can't remember it. I have it on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember it. And this intermediate race, they can get you into contact with the Viracocha, according to the legend. And there's a whole, and I heard this myself in the Andes. I was told this in the Andes by the Andean people, and then it was confirmed in several ways later on. To reach this intermediate, the red eyes, let's call them, because that's what they're called in Quechua, the red eyes. To reach the red eyes, you have to cross a bridge in the Andes, and they tie a rope around your waist, and you there's an area of the Andes where you can go into, and the Capacuna will tie a rope around your waist, and you go into this region. And the reason why they tie a rope around your waist is because when you get in there, everything changes. It's like, you know, I don't want to say a different dimension, because we can't even conceptualize another dimension. It's, you know, it's very sci-fi.
Wow, interesting.
But when you go in there, everything changes, and so you don't know your way out. It's almost like walking through the wardrobe into Narnia, and that's why you have to have the rope tied around your waist. And this is the legend. It was told directly to me, and then I heard it. It was confirmed several times in different ways that this is indeed what this secret society believes. At least this is what they believe, and it's very ancient, and it's a very closely kept secret. And then these red eyes can introduce you, if you're worthy, to the Viracocha. And so that's just one legend regarding. I think that resonates with what you were saying.
It's interesting too that the Nazis would relocate to South America based on what you're telling me and what they were into.
Exactly. Yeah, the Vril, which very interesting.
Yeah. The just briefly here before we close, my father worked with some Nazi scientists reversing their theoretical physics, and they told him the technology came from aliens. They claimed to never met them. Their bosses did, supposedly, their commanders. My dad thought they were evil spirits, maybe perhaps satanic. He said the lack of actual contact made him doubt their story. But I'm hearing a lot of similarities from what I've heard from my father as he disclosed to me what he did in his final years. We're just about out of time. Listen, after the first of the year, we're going to have you back on, because I want to proceed down this path here. We just opened up Pandora's box, and we just gave a teaser. And I think that we need to come back and greatly expand on this. But very quickly here, I just want to make sure I have this right. Your website is timothyalbarino.com. Is that still correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And the book I really highly recommend reading, and I'm going to tell you, folks, you're going to spend some time with it, because it's voluminous in information and documentation. It's called Birthright. and it's the coming post-human apocalypse, which we didn't even get to, and the usurpation of Adam's dominion on planet Earth. And I think we're going through it right now. Fascinating stuff, Tim. I got to tell you, I've admired your work from afar, but getting into it the way we have here, I have a whole new appreciation. So we'll be in contact with you after the first of the year and try to get you back on, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you having me on today. So anytime,
fantastic Dave. Stuff, and I highly recommend the book. Thanks so much, Tim. We'll be in
touch.
Thank you.
All right.